Mr. Douglas, reel 15. You were just mentioning about your wedding ring.
Yes, I got two eggs, and I thought they were hard boiled. I broke one, and it broke my hand. So, most of it got wasted. But the other one, I put on and sort of sucked it dry. And I remember on the thinking that the sea was grey. You know, it wasn't. I thought the Mediterranean was blue. It was cold day. It was because, as I say, it was May, fairly early in the year. You know, for heat. And I remember, this is not a blue Mediterranean. And we landed, I think, in Palermo, where we landed.
How long did that journey take?
Took a good while. Well, best part of a day. It wasn't a very fast ship. I don't know how far it is, from Tunis to Sicily. I don't know whether we were there overnight on the boat or not. I can't remember. But I know we landed in Sicily, Palermo.
Did it ever cross your mind that the ship might be hit by our own?
Attacked, yes. It crossed my mind, like, you know. I thought, well, if we get torpedoed, we'll be that with the finish one. Because it didn't look very inviting to see. As I say, it was cold and grey looking.
And how many were on board? Was it just the ones that had been captured?
Yes. But I say it wasn't a great big ship. And they were pretty decent. They didn't let you walk around, they let you walk around the ship and that. And so there was no way you could go. You were on the ship and that was it. And we weren't armed or anything. And I think we ran overnight, but of course the next day, when said to land and you know, it was one of the sergeant majors of the Green Navy said, "Now, lads," he says, "we're not going to go on there like raggle tackles." He says, "Get yourself smartened up." And I remember I got a piece of wood and I split it and I had a razor blade and I jammed it in these two pieces of wood together, and we shaved with that because we hadn't had a shave for days. It was a rather painful procedure, but we got shaved and we, you know, we all got washed and tidied up. And when we marched up the ship. When we got off the ship on the sea, we marched like British soldiers. You know, we won't let them say that we were a defeated army.
So did that make you feel better?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, I remember there was people on the selling food and, like, of course, were foreign people. And I remember when we marched through them, and I thought, well, they're a bit of a raggle-taggle people, these, you know, this lint. They didn't look very much to me. And they marched us through this town and then up into the mountains. Very high snow. All the snow up there. And when we got up there, there was a camp. And there was quite a few Americans in it.
Can you describe the camp?
Well, it was high. There was buildings for the Italian guards, but we were put into tents, marquees, small marquees. There was quite a few Americans there. They'd been there a while, you know. They put us into marquees with bunks. You know, there were so many in the marquee.
Can you remember how many were in a marquee?
Well, there were maybe 20, 30 men. And I was in charge of marquee, of course. Sargent, and the Americans, they didn't think much of the camp, but when I spoke over, they said it was a terrible place, a bad place. They said that they told me, and I don't know whether it was true, like they said that the camp commandant and his officers, they were fishing on Red Cross parcels, and what they got, of course, was a small tin of meat, some sort of meat, and sort of a little round bone, wasn't a loaf, it was British stuff, like bread, and a small bowl of soup a day. That's all we got. And the men had to go up on the mountain, break stones to make them roads, you know. And I didn't go there, like, cause I was in charge, and I stayed behind in the marquee. They took our boots off us. I take a size 9, they gave us a size 7, 6, I think, it was 6 and a 7. I couldn't get more on at all. I had to cut the tour off, you know, the idea was to stop me from escaping. Where the hell I thought we were going to go, up on a mountain without all snow and ice. And when I was up there, there was an interpreter, and he wasn't very good. He spoke English, but a very, very poor sort of English. And they came and sought me and took me away. I wasn't quite sure what it was about. And they took me in front of this commander, and I was being accused of sabotage against their war with it. And I said, I couldn't, but apparently what had happened, when they got these stones, you know, they must have blasted them, and they had hammers and smashed them onto smaller pieces, and they put them on a stretcher, sort of wooden stretcher thing, a man at the front, a man at the back, two handles, and they brought them and took them down to the heap, big heap where they put them. And they were bringing this stretcher down, and one of the lads slipped on a stone. And of course, it went, and the stretcher tipped over. And I was accused of it. I said, it was an accident. I said, that it wasn't done on purpose. Because I said, the man slipped, I seen him. And I said, I asked him, and he said, well, you're in charge of them, and it's your fault. You shouldn't let this happen. Well, I said, I wasn't even there. I said, I was back in the camp. I wasn't even there. And I said, it wasn't done purposely. But anyway, I was. And I got sentenced to 5 days punishment. So the commandant handcuffed me round this pole. And I had to stand there. I couldn't. I used to last 4 or 5 hours. And then I just cooled, bitterly cooled, and I would come around in the guard room, and there'd be spoon and hot soup and toast to fetch his round, you know. And I had to do that, and I had to do that every day till my sentence was. I got so many days of this, but I couldn't do a day. The last 3 hours was bitterly cold. Bitterly cold. We were up the top of a mountain, nearly. There was snow and everything, you know, and the wind. And I was just used to stand there. And eventually, I just kind of collapsed. And then I would wake up every day, and they'd be giving us some hot soup to, you know, the guards in their guard room. I remember that.
Did they give you any clothing to keep warm? Any additional clothing?
No, we got nothing. Nothing. Just we got a little tin of, small tin of meat and this bone thing, and a small bowl of soup.
That's all you got.
That was your whack.
Just going back to the camp itself, and you mentioned the tents. How many tents were there? Could you?
There was about 4 or 5 tents, marquees. And there were some buildings for the Italians themselves, the guards. But the commander, he was away from it, further away, so I didn't see where they lived like, but I was just, I was in charge of this marquee, and they used to march the men away every morning.
So how many men do you think were there in the camp?
Hard to say, because there was Americans there as well. But, I don't know.
What were conditions like in these marquees?
Well, there was nothing. There was nothing. There was just the bunks. Wood. I think we had a blanket. I think they gave us a blanket each. And that was all. Because it was very cold at night. You couldn't sleep for the cold, man. You know? And as I say, they took our boots off and gave us small sizes, small, because they said that we would stop, we would escape, we couldn't travel far. You were crippled with your feet, so the mentality of these Italians, it's funny, it's queer ideas.
Was there any heating in the tents? Hmm? Was there any heating in the tents, the marquees? Heating?
No heating. No heating of any kind.
What about sanitation?
Well, it was just the ordinary latrine trench. That was all. Well, you didn't spend much time there, it was too cold.
What about washing facilities? Was there anything? Could you wash and keep clean?
No, there was nothing. It was a transit camp, so it wasn't a permanent camp, you know. It was there, but I don't know how long were there, but took to a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, maybe. And then they shifted us up away from there. To up into Italy, a proper camp in Italy, the northern Italy, near Ancona, it was.
Just before we come on to that, how did the guards treat you in this first transit camp that you went to?
Well, they were all right, because they couldn't speak you couldn't speak their language, you couldn't speak our language, and they were rather arrogant. But that was the uniforms. They weren't good soldiers. I suppose, mind, they wouldn't have been prison guards. They wouldn't be maybe the best of their soldiers. But they were a bit raggle-taggle. But they were rather arrogant fellas. Like, you know, they weren't too easy when they handled it. I'd say they used to come drag me out and over the marquee, come every morning, seekers. There were six of them. And they would grab me and, oh, quick march, the way they go on, like the like clowns. And of course, they dragged me to this, fastened me around this pool with handcuffs. And there would be. That's my most vivid memory, like, of that camp.
Was anybody else punished for any other? Was anybody else punished for any other kind of?
No, we weren't allowed to mix too much. Like, you know, you were in your own marquee, and they sort of kept you in there when you were in there until they came and took them away. Where the men, not me, as I say, and like one the sergeant was in charge. And they took the men away.
How did you fill your time in whilst you were there? What was a typical day like?
Nout to do. Just as you sit in the marquee and try and keep warm. Run down, march. Your feet couldn't do much. You were the bloody boots to give us a cut the foot two off. They weren't comfortable, you know. They just time dragged. I should be waiting for the lads coming back from the work. Because then that's when you got your meal, of course. When you got your meal and that was it, you just sort of had a bit of chat, talk, and lay down eventually, went to sleep, if you could, for the cold. It was very, very cold. Very cold. Very cold.
What sort of state were you in by this time? And the rest of the men? Physically and mentally.
We weren't in the best of health. We were hungry because the rations weren't enough, really, to, you know. And the lads weren't very happy that they happened to go in this quarry place and smash stone, bricks and stones up. They made them work pretty hard, I think. As I say, that was my experience in Sicily.
Did you have any contact with home whilst you were in this camp?
No, there was no mail, nothing like that. No, at that particular time, and we eventually went, and we put on a big train with a lot more troops from the 8th Army, assembled us up and put us on this train. It was a big long train. They crammed us in there, and there was the 8th Army medicines, was all sorts on this train, and they took us up into Italy. I don't know how the hell we got to Italy. The train must have went on a ferry. I can't remember being on a boat anymore. Must have been a ferry or something. I can't remember.
Where did they take you to?
We went to a proper camp, Ann Corner. And there in that camp I met some of the old 8 Derham friends. There was Chalky White, Sergeant Major those sergeants together, and he got made up Sergeant Major like. But they'd been captured with the army, the Desert Rats, the 8th Army. And they had been captured months and months previously, because it was a big camp, Satori. There were big high buildings, I remember, and there was a lot of men in there. And coupled me, you had to get a mucker, you know, to when I got this lad called... Pat from Sunderland. He was a sergeant, because it was all NCA NCOs camp. Where? No, it wasn't. It was a Satori. I can't remember the number. It was a big camp.
Can you describe the camp?
Thousands in that. A lot of men in there.
A lot of men in that camp.
Yeah.
What was it like? What were the buildings like? Can you describe it?
There were white stucco. They were, you know, plain but very high. Quite high buildings, I remember that. There was double bunks, a bottom and a top one, double bunks.
How many men would be in each hotel?
About 100 men, I would think, in each Satori. There were big buildings, like big warehouse.
And what were they like inside? Can you describe them?
There was nothing, just the bunks and what you had, you know, with you. You were issued with a couple of blankets. It was hot there, quite hot. By then, the summer was coming on, and I remember it was warm. And it was an established camp. You got fed after fashion, and that's where we got a first Red Cross partial. Because half with his Sergeant Patterson, he was Sunderlandy, he worked for a firm, furniture firm. He used to get old furniture and renovate, sort of thing. And I remember he was in terrible state because he was being starved. He'd been a prisoner a lot longer than me. And when he got the parcel, he wanted to eat it all at once. And I said, well, you only get one a week. I said, well, you've got to make it last. We'll eat the chocolate now, he said. And he was poor. He starved. But you had to have a friend, a mucker, like to share, because you only got one between two, you see. And sometimes you got stuff you didn't like. There was a mart where you could swap. It was all organised by the lads, and they had things called bluers, where you could just a tin, because there was all sorts of clever people in the army. I remember that's where I learned how to make tin and how to make a tin opener. You take a heel plate off your boots and half it, and the curved bit, you know, you get that, and you rub and rub on the stone until you get it shut, and you stick that on the tin, push it around, that's how you open your tin. And of course, no tins are thrown away. Tins we've got, you've got the tin, you've got cut the seam off, and then you flattened it by a piece of wood and another piece of wood, and you get it as smooth as anything. And you could work those tinsmiths, would have been clever people, but. And you would make, I watched them making blows. I made one myself. It was tin, with a sort of a tunnel, and a piece of wire bent for a crank, and make a fan out of another piece of tin fixed on. And you turn that, and it creates a force draft to burn anything. And that's how you got a brew. That's it, boiled your water for a brew of tea. That's when I first got my lice in that camp. There was an Air Force fella, and he gave us a shirt. Their shirts are like linen. Ours was wool, infantry wool shirt, and it was hot on that camp. And he gave me this shirt, and it was, I didn't know. It was alive with lice, and I was crawling with lice within a couple of years, and that was one of your main occupations, was killing lice. You know, but you couldn't get on the ground, crawling on the ground, man. Was
there a big problem?
Everybody lice. Was lousy.
What was sanitation like?
Bugs. We used to come out at night, they were in the woods, in the bunks. You'd wake up next to a lot of red sores where you'd been bitten with the bugs, bed bugs. Sanitation was primitive, just to hold a line of holes into a under container. They used to take them up out of the use, you would think, they get the cotton, that sort of thing. I remember you talk about blows, I remember it's a fella made one by, it was a work of art, it was beautiful, wonderful thing. And the camp commandants used to come into camp and march around with a pompous little, and he saw this, and he wanted it, and the fella would give him it. I suppose he could have commandeered it, but he wouldn't. He says, no, it's mine, you can't have it, you'll give it to me, and he wouldn't. And out of spite what he did, the Red Cross parcels, when they came in, there was so many Satori, call them Satori's, the buildings, and there was one between two, and he got them, punctured every tea, opened every packet, chucked them in a blanket, and you had to carry the blanket down, sort it out as best you could. There was soup in the tea, there was one mess, and he'd done that for over nearly a month. Oh, and that was just spite. He said it was because we'd been trying to escape, but anybody that there are now tried to escape. But that's the sort of things that turned me, the Italians.
And these were Italian guards again. Italian guards.
Yeah, they were always walking around like in twos or threes. The water was put on once, sometimes twice a day. We'll put water on. And you queue up trying to wash a shirt. The bloody lace was what was called with lace. Your shirt come up lousy as well, lousy and went in. And of course, when they cut the water off, that was it. You got no more wool. They only put it on once, sometimes twice a day, but there must have been a bit of a shortage of water, especially in that summer. It was hot there. But there was lots to do in that camp.
What about drinking water?
Well, you had to get the when the water was on, you see.
Was the same one you had to wash in, was it?
A line of taps, and there was a line of basin things where you could do your washing.
And you drank the same water that you had to wash in?
Well, not after you'd washed it, but you drank that water. There was only one source of water. There wasn't any separate water. And as I say, it may be on for an hour, a couple of hours, never cut off, and it might come on again. Because the water's on, it was a rush, you see.
Was that the only way you could keep yourselves clean?
Aye. There was knee baths and out like that there. Just wash, you know, strip off and wash yourself, like, and that was it.
What was men's health like in that camp?
Remarkable. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. I got yellow jaundice. The stodge, we call it stodge. There was a certain amount of meat and veg, and we used to get paid. The prisoner of war, you're allowed so much money, you know, according to your rank, like, and the money we used to give to a fella, he had a horse and cart, and he used to go around the hedgerows cutting fennel and edible weeds and things, and he'd bring them in every day, and they would cut it up and put it in the stodge, a big round containers for one for each Tory, you know. They used to put a big pool between, and you take your turns again, and then they would dish the stodge. You got a basin full of stodge a day. If it wasn't the Red Cross starving parcels, it would have been a terrible state.
Is that the only food they gave you?
The stodge, you've never got no else. And bread, we've got bread. But we didn't get any luxuries at all. That was just all you got. But it was an interesting camp because the weather was good, of course, warm, and lots going off. There was games, football, cricket. We had a great big compound where you could walk and play sports. There was a mart where every day you could go and swap a tin of peas for a tin of soup or a tin of celery cuts. They were never very popular because they were nearly water. There was no filling in them. Everybody wanted bulk. But there was a game they played. I remember a game of Monopoly. There were maybe 30. Started in the morning in number 2 Satori. I used to go up and watch. And they'd play till dark. And maybe he's not finished the game. And they really entered into it. And they had a proper auctioneer telling that it was good. And we used to go up there for the time as well. The fella made a clock. Called it the Klim clock. You should get Klim milk. That's milk spelled backwards, K-L-I-M. Yeah, it was called Klim. It was on the tin, like Klim, and they were very large tins, about that high, and there was quite a lot of tin on them when you got them flattened out and that. And he made this clock, the pendulum. He must have been a proper watchmaker. And everything was made out of tin and bits of wire, and that kept perfect time. You just like, you know, once a week, it kept more or less perfect time. Penrose this way, it was up, way up on them. And everybody used to go in there for the time, the claim clock. So it, apart from the art being hungry, you know, it wasn't too bad. You wasn't cold, warm, summer.
Did that cause a problem with health? I mean, you mentioned lice and things like that. Did the heat cause you any more problems?
Not a lot, no. Because I say that the Red Cross parcels were a great... They were very good parcels. They used to get the... We were always about chocolates. It was...